Hey, it's Scott, and guess what? You're about to hear an ad. And that's both good and bad. It's good because ads are what make it possible for me to keep bringing you these episodes. And it's bad because, well, maybe you don't like listening to ads, and I get that. And the good news is, you don't have to. When you sign up to support the show, you get every single episode without any ads. Plus, you get all the bonus episodes. Yeah, did you know there are actually bonus episodes? And you can try it all for free just to see what it's like. If you're on an iPhone, just go to the What Was That Like podcast and at the top, click on Try Free and you're in. On Android, just go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus and try it out completely free. Once you've had the ad-free experience, you'll see why hundreds of other listeners are already doing it. But for now, here's another ad and then on with today's episode.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
What Was That Like? Contains adult language and content and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
I don't remember exactly how that conversation came about, but I do know that I started texting people and saying, hey, remember how we always joked about this? What would you all think about if we tried it out? And much to my surprise, I had a reasonable turnaround. People are all like, yep, let's do it.
Welcome to What Was That Like? I'm your host, Scott Johnson. This is the show where we talk to regular people, people just like you or just like me, who have found themselves in an extremely unusual situation. We'll hear their stories and get inside their head because we all want to know, what was that like? More information about each episode at whatwasthatlike.com. Here we go. Today's conversation is one I've been looking forward to ever since I first came across the story. As you might know, I've said in the past that one of my goals for this show is to never be boring, and today's topic fits in perfectly with that goal. My guest's name is Shiny, not his real name, of course. Shiny was presented with a rare situation. Some might even call it an opportunity. How would you respond if you were given the opportunity to actually eat meat that came from a human being? Well, for most people, the reaction would be, absolutely not. That's disgusting. But what if it could be done in a way that was legal and ethical? And in addition, what if it were done in a way that was healthy, so you wouldn't have to worry about disease or infection or any of that? Well, honestly, for most people, I think the reaction would still be, no way. But Shiny is not like most people. He and a bunch of his friends are pretty open-minded, and they seem to be willing to try just about anything. And they did. Usually when you hear stories about cannibalism, it involves a serial killer like Jeffrey Dahmer, Or it might be about a group of people who are stranded somewhere for an extended period of time and they end up eating the weakest in the group just to be able to stay alive. Shiny's story does not involve murder or survival. It's really just a story about a brunch that none of them will ever forget. We'll definitely be talking about this one over in the Facebook group, and you're welcome to join us there at whatwasthatlike.com/Facebook. And if you like this kind of story, or maybe you even like the true crime podcasts, hang around, and after today's conversation, we'll hear from my friend Justin about his podcast. Might be one you want to check out. And now, please enjoy my rather unusual conversation with Shiny. I have so many questions about this.
Fantastic.
And I hope that the people listening to this aren't thinking of a particular question that they're really hoping I'm going to ask and I forget to ask it, because I've kind of made some notes here ahead of time. But we should say up front that in doing this, your wish is to remain anonymous, and I think people will understand that once we get into what this story is about. And I'm going to be referring to you as a nickname, Shiny, at your request.
I do appreciate that, Scott.
Sure. And of course, there were some friends involved with this whole thing, and we're not going to identify them in any way, and there's going to be no pictures of you or your friends on the website. It's kind of a different episode than what I usually do. I mean, I like to say that this podcast is never boring, and boy, we're knocking it out of the park today, I think, with this one. So you and your friends had actually talked about doing something in the past, right? How did this come up in the past?
I have a very close set of friends who all have a very dark sense of humor. And back in the day, and this is probably 13 years ago now, we were all sitting around one night and saying, okay, well, we're all epicurious people. We like to eat weird stuff and try different things and, you know, just try out everything in life. And so if it were ethical, so healthy, full consent given, no one was harmed, would you try some people? Try some little people meat, maybe some people jerky, you know, just to try it out. Just to say you try it, to understand it, just to try it. And of course, we all said, oh, yes, I'd do that. Of course I would. You know, it'd be weird and whatnot, but to try it out, absolutely.
Sure, it's easy to say you'd try it when you've really pretty sure that opportunity's never going to come up.
I mean, what's the likelihood, right?
Right. And just to be clear what we're talking about here, when you say people jerky, we're talking about actual human flesh.
Yes.
Okay.
We're talking about cannibalism in a non-like killy way.
Can you just elaborate a little bit? What do you feel when you talk about two criteria, ethical and healthy? Can you elaborate on each of these as to how it would meet those requirements?
So basically, you want something that's not diseased tissue. You don't want rotten meat or something that's gone gangrenous or something like that. And you want it to be ethical. So nobody was harmed to take it, and consent was given. You don't just want to take somebody's meat. That's not nice. And nobody was killed for it. So this is no Donner Party or anything like that. It's just, circumstances allowed for a unique situation.
And the question that comes to mind, too, is this actually legal?
Sure. There's no laws against it. All laws surrounding cannibalism are typically associated with killing people. There's no laws against it, except in Idaho and Alaska.
So only two states have outlawed actual cannibalism. But yeah, but you're right. It's the surrounding circumstances where typically a person is killed before they get eaten.
Yes.
Yeah. And even for non-diseased tissue, are there any health concerns beyond that?
You know, so we did some research before we did it, and there's the prion disease that's much like mad cow disease. And typically it's associated with eating brain tissue, but it can come from eating any tissue whatsoever. And it's a very low likelihood of that. Also, I've done blood tests and everything like that as in the hospital, and they ran all kinds of tests. I mean, I don't have any bloodborne diseases. I don't have any bacteriological infections. And before they chopped off the bottom part of my foot, they cleaned it up really well. And so when we got it back, we were kind of like dubious as to like, is this going to be okay? But yeah, no bad effects. This has been 3 years now.
So you it sounds like you really kind of did your homework on this. And so you were going in with your eyes open, knowing what was going on. Okay. So you guys had joked about it in the past, but thinking, well, of course we'll say that, but the opportunity I'm sure will never come up. But then you had a motorcycle accident.
Yeah.
Can you kind of take us through that?
Sure. It was a lovely Memorial Day afternoon up in the mountains. I was cruising around on my motorcycle, was headed back into town, and there's a whole lot of little fishing holes along my little mountain route. And as I was coming up, there was some opposing traffic that had stopped and had their blinker on to pull across the road into a fishing area. I had two cars up ahead of me, and about 100 yards, and the cars had stopped. Both those cars went by, and then the car was still stopped. So I said to myself, all right, he sees me, he's waiting. And when I got about 10, 15 feet away, he hit the gas, pulled right into my lane, and hit the back of my motorcycle. I fishtailed, flipped it, and flew into the woods.
How did he was turning left in front of you as you approached him.
Uh-huh.
How is it that his car hit the back of your motorcycle? You'd already passed him mostly, and he just turned too soon?
Pretty much.
Okay.
And what it is, it was a kid. He was with his girlfriend on Memorial Day. They were out having a good time, and they were doing something in the car, and he wasn't paying attention.
Mm.
You know, looked up, hit the gas, and just found the back of my motorcycle.
I'm sure that's a day he'll never forget either.
Yeah. You know, I too have hit somebody in the past, and it wasn't necessarily my fault, but it was a traumatizing experience and something that haunts me to this day. And no, you don't forget stuff like that. It's absolutely horrible.
So you got thrown off the bike kind of into the woods.
Yep. And when I went back to check it out after the fact, I mean, the trees were really close, so I'm pretty sure I hit my foot on one of the trees flying through.
But you didn't know that immediately, though.
Not immediately. What it was, I kind of sat up in the woods and looked around, and I take off my helmet. I just feel this intense burning on my leg. And I look down, and kind of my shoe is just kind of dangling there, and I can see some bone and some meat. And I'm like, oh, that's bad. That's bad. And so I start screaming for help. And a couple people come down. And this whole section is somewhat fuzzy because I went into shock pretty quick. I do remember a woman coming down and putting a blanket on me. And then a couple more women coming down. There was a woman and her young daughter, and her young daughter went up to the truck and brought back a tourniquet for me and tied off a tourniquet on my leg. Another woman, because this is in the northern New Mexico, she came back and applied essential oils to my forehead without consent, mind you. She just started rubbing stuff on my face, and I, in a not very nice way, asked her to leave. Because, you know, I have enough going on. I don't need like anything rubbed on my face.
And that's not exactly a first aid procedure anyway.
No. but for some people, that's just the end all and beginning. So, you know.
Right. Whatever. I'm sure she had good intentions.
She had great intentions. She just had absolutely no idea what she was doing. And in my luck, you know, there was a off-duty EMT that was close by that came down and helped out as well.
Hmm.
So it was about a half.
Obviously, somebody called 911, so the ambulance was on the way, I'm sure, too.
It was a heavily trafficked area. There was plenty of people around, and, you know, so it worked out. About a half hour there, loaded me into the ambulance, tried to clean out the wound, and gave me some morphine, which, you know, did absolutely nothing except make me slightly nauseous. They take me to an area where they could get me on a helicopter and airlift me out of there. And that was about another half hour waiting there. Then on the helicopter, they said, we'd like to give you some ketamine to help with the pain. Are you okay with that? And I was like, yeah, sure. I don't remember the helicopter ride at all because I was transcending time and space and contemplating my own existence, which I think kind of helped out in the whole experience because I was in pretty good spirits for the rest of the time.
Here's my hot take for today. If you see something advertised as a free trial, it might cost you more than you expect. At least that's my experience. I give up my credit card to try something for free for a week, then I forget about it, and now I'm paying for it every month without even noticing it. But when I signed up for Rocket Money, that ridiculous waste came to a screeching halt. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending, and it helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings. It lets you see all of your subscriptions listed right there in one place. When you see a subscription you're paying for but you don't want, do you really want to spend an hour on the phone trying to track down some customer service agent to cancel it? Rocket Money can help you get rid of it with just a few taps. They also give me this great dashboard so I can see what I've spent this month compared to last month. And they'll even try to negotiate lower bills for me by up to 20%, so I'm spending less and saving more. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/whatwas. That's rocketmoney.com/whatwas. rocketmoney.com/whatwas.
This episode is sponsored by Cook Unity. Go to cookunity.com/what or enter code WHAT before checkout for 50% off your first week. When Jeannie and I go out to eat at some local restaurant, one of the things I love to try is a curry dish. I just love it when a chef can get that perfect balance of spices. It's one of my favorite meals. But even better is to have an amazing curry meal without having to go out, like the one I had recently. It was cauliflower and chickpea coconut curry with steamed jasmine rice. And even though it was created by a professional local chef here in Florida, we enjoyed that meal right here at home, thanks to Cook Unity. And you know what else I love? All the prep and cooking is done for me ahead of time. So all I do is just choose the one I want, and 2 minutes later, I'm enjoying a tasty hot meal. It feels like I'm one of those wealthy podcasters with a chef on staff right here at home. Cook Unity meals arrive fresh. They've never been frozen. All of their packaging is earth-friendly, and it's cheaper than other delivery options. Oh, and you have to try that coconut curry.
Experience chef-quality meals every week delivered right to your door. Go to cookunity.com/what or enter code WHAT before checkout for 50% off your first week. That's 50% off your first week by using code WHAT or going to cookunity.com/what.
I'll confess, sometimes I let my podcast playlist get out of hand and I get way behind. But there's one show that I subscribe to, and any new episode goes right to the top of the queue. That's the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's because I never have to figure out, okay, is this one going to be interesting, or do I wait for the next one, like I do for some shows? Because Jordan's conversations are always a must-listen for me. He talks to fascinating people from any category you can think of. Authors, scientists, athletes, you name it. He's talked to undercover cops who posed as mafia, and the actual career mafia hitmen. And the stories he gets out of these people, just incredible. In one episode, he talked to Paul Holes. You might know that name if you're into true crime. He's the former investigator who uses really advanced methods to solve cold cases, including the Golden State Killer. And another one I really enjoyed was with Sam Harris, an author and neuroscientist who promotes skepticism. And he doesn't mind taking on some seriously controversial topics like politics or religion. That one's going to make you think. Whenever a new episode of the Jordan Harbinger Show pops up, I already know it's going to be an episode that I'll enjoy listening to, and I'll bet you will too. For some episode recommendations, check out jordanharbinger.com/start or search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
How long was the ride to the hospital?
Probably about another half an hour from where I was. So I'd say it's probably an hour and a half from accident to hospital where I started being evaluated by the surgeons.
And you were conscious at that time?
I was conscious the entire time, just not necessarily cognizant just because of the medications. But all my medical charts say I was in very good spirits.
At what point did they determine how to proceed with your foot?
Well, you know, I have vague memories of doctors telling me, you know, you may lose the foot, that as they were evaluating it, taking x-rays, things like that. And they said, we can try to reestablish, you know, vascular pressure and try to get blood back in the foot and see what we can do. And I was like, you know, I'm kind of attached to it. Please do what you can. Let's see how this works out. Just if you can save it, go try to save it. But again, this is vague recollections because I was heavily medicated.
And in looking, I saw some of the pictures, one of the pictures of an x-ray of your foot, and it just looked like just a pile of bone fragments. Like there wasn't even a resemblance of skeletal structure there.
No, it's all bits and pieces. And I didn't understand until after, you know, a couple of days that they started showing me the CAT scans and the x-rays, that it's just bits and pieces in a vaguely foot shape. It was completely macerated.
So there was no hope for it then?
No. What I was told was, if you have this, you will be on pain medication and it'll never be weight bearing. This will always be a burden as long as you have it.
So was it a fairly easy decision? Not that it's easy, but the decision to amputate?
I think I hung on to it for a couple of days and kind of pondered it about what kind of life I wanted to leave. And I had a guy come visit me who went through a similar experience. He worked with the Amputee Coalition and does peer visits. And his story mirrored mine in some ways. He was a military guy. He had an accident and basically pulverized his foot as well. And for 5 years, he went through surgeries trying to fix it. I think he has something on the order of 30 plus surgeries, and it had been 5 years in a wheelchair and on pain medications, being addicted to them and living with his parents and being completely depressed and not having any sort of life. And then he said, you know what? Take it off. And within 6 months, he has a life again. He's up walking around. He's off the medications and everything's better. And listening to that kind of cemented it to where I am not somebody to sit around. I'd go crazy. I can't have an office job because I can't. I got to be up and moving around. And that's just not the kind of life I want to lead. So it was kind of at that point, I was like, well, yeah, take it off. Let's figure it out.
So they took it off and saved it for you. Did you ask them immediately that you wanted to tell them you wanted to keep it?
Yes. And originally it wasn't to eat it. It was, I wanted to taxidermy it or freeze dry it and have it as like a doorstop. You know, it's mine. I'm not going to let it go.
You know, honestly, a doorstop, that sounds almost as weird as eating it.
It's been fantastic. But okay. So it is like $1,200 to freeze dry a foot. And that I couldn't afford that at the time. And I called around to like 13 taxidermists, or my friends did rather, and nobody would take us seriously. And in all honesty, I don't know if they're allowed to handle human remains. So that may have been part of it. But I couldn't find anybody to do it. So I figured I'm going to have it and I'm going to cremate it. That way, at least I have it with me. I know where it is. It's over on my desk right now in a little jar. Mm-hmm. So that was the original plan. It wasn't until after the surgery, after I'm home, that I started thinking about, well, if I get it back, like what if the meat's still good? What if we could like try that out? I don't remember exactly how that conversation came about, but I do know that I started texting people and saying, hey, remember how we always joked about this? What would you all think about if we tried it out? And much to my surprise, I had a reasonable turnaround. People are like, Yep, let's do it.
You have a very unusual set of friends.
You know, you go through life and you find people who accentuate your life. And you got to keep those people around. It's an effort, but you find good people and you keep them.
But at that point, when you told them about it, did you already have it in your possession or was it still in the fridge at the hospital?
It's still in the fridge at the hospital. And so I didn't know what situation it would be like. I don't know if it was frozen. I don't know if it was refrigerated. I assumed it'd be pretty well taken care of because it's a hospital and the pathology department. But I had no idea. So this was kind of, we'll wait and see what happens. As a couple weeks went by and I went and picked it up, which is also weird because you go sit in a little chair, sign some forms, and then they just give you a foot in a bag.
And the forms were, I assume, releasing the hospital of liability or something like that?
That's all it is. It's release form saying, you understand this is biological waste, but it is yours, and we respect that. And we are not taking any part of what you're doing here.
All right. Yeah. Because it is, I mean, it's a biohazard. There's certain, they even have very strict guidelines on how to dispose of that kind of thing anyway. Here they were handing it back to you.
Yeah. So, you know, I had a foot in a bag and I put it in an ice chest and went home.
Is that the point where you said, okay, guys, we're really going to do this?
Yeah. The next morning, you know, we made a casting of it and went through the whole process. I went and I took a little chunk out of the next to the shin bone.
Is this after everybody had already arrived?
No. This is, you know, a couple days before.
Okay.
So I take a chunk out of the shin bone and then we try to do a foot casting, and that was just a whole thing.
What is it? Can you describe? I'm not sure what is a foot casting.
Well, they have arts and crafts stuff where it's kind of a malleable material. It's almost like a gel and it sets up. And so you can take a cast of an oddly shaped structure to pour plaster in and make a plaster cast. And so it was my friends all like trying to layer on this plastic material onto, you know, a severed foot to try to get the shape out of it and let it dry for a little bit. And so that was a couple hours in the morning. And then we let it dry and poured some plaster in it. And then the rest of the foot in the afternoon, I went and took and had it cremated.
So that was the final goodbye to the, at least most of the foot anyway.
Yeah. And then we had Saturday brunch a couple of days later. I gave I think it was about 2 to 4 ounces of meat and sinew off the shin bone there. And I have a good friend who's a very capable chef.
First experience for him too, I'm sure.
Yeah. That was a fun question of, hey man, would you be willing to cook up some of me? And he said, let me think about this. And he came back and said, yep, I'm totally down to do this. I'm going to figure this out. And so he took it and I can't remember exactly what he marinated it in, but it's something to soften it up because it's an area of the people where it's not going to be soft meat. It's going to be very sinewy, lots of tendons and stuff like that. So he marinated it overnight and I show up to their house and with a bunch of other people. And, you know, we have some pastries and there's some fruit tarts and little stuff like that. And then he starts grilling up this meat and made like, we called it foot tacos, but really it was like a tostada with a little bit of fajita meat on it is basically what it was.
What was the feeling or like the ambiance in the room? Was it kind of like a little awkward because everybody knew what was about to happen, or was it kind of a joking thing, or how did your friends feel?
There was a lot of dark humor and joking going on just to ease the weirdness because it's super weird. Yeah. We're going to cross that taboo. if ever you bring up cannibalism, it's always under dubious situations where either you have primitive cultures, you know, going and eating their enemies or, you know, their loved ones to keep them around, or you have either serial killers who are fantastically not necessarily human in mindset, or you have like tragedies like the Donner Party and stuff like that, where people are surviving, or that soccer team in the Andes. You never have fun cannibalism.
Right. Two words you don't usually hear in the same sentence. I keep thinking of a couple of scenes. Like one, of course, is Anthony Hopkins and Hannibal at the end of the movie. I'm having some friends over for dinner with some fava beans or something, whatever that line was.
Yeah.
And I'm picturing the scene from The Office where Michael Scott burned his foot on the Foreman grill. This is like a textbook example of dark humor. There's so many potential jokes that would lend themselves well to this. So how many people were there total?
11.
So there was enough that your chef divided it up so that there was enough for pretty much everyone to just get a bite, right? It's not like it's a meal.
Pretty much a bite. He made 12 little samples. One person had seconds.
Did anyone, once they got to the point where it's okay, this is really going to happen, did anyone actually decline?
No, nobody declined. However, one friend got a chewy bit, and bless her heart, you know, they chewed it for a while. It said, you know, I'm so sorry. I have to spit you out. I can't.
And of course, I'm sure you didn't take offense at that. What was the actual cooking process? I mean, were there seasoning and or how was it? Or is it just put in a pan and grilled on the stove?
It was a pan on the stove. So it was the marinated meat. They chopped it up into little bits, put it on the stove with some salt and pepper, a little squeeze of lime. Sauteed it, took it out, sauteed some peppers and onions, put it all back together, and then chopped it up finer with a little bit of chimichurri sauce? There was some sort of little fancy green sauce there that went over the top of it.
Hey, this is Scott. Did you know we offer a premium feed of this show that is completely ad-free and there are bonus episodes? Go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus or just click the link in the show notes of any episode to learn more and to sign up. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you can sign up right there in the app by clicking try free at the top of the episode list. And I hope to see you in the premium feed soon.
So not overly seasoned to where obviously the point of this is to taste what the meat tastes like. You didn't want to go overboard with the seasoning.
There wasn't a whole lot of seasoning, and that's to the credit of the chef. He knew exactly the right way to do it, even though without the experience, you extrapolate. So he knew what he was doing. But I don't think part of it was having the experience of like trying people. The other part of it, I think, was my friends coming together to help me move forward through a tragic experience. This is a way to kind of pull a little bow on it and move on in a fitting way.
Did it smell like regular meat when you were cooking it?
Yeah. I mean,
of course, when you saute onions, they have a very distinctive smell, which smells really good. So that probably was part of what contributed to the aroma.
Yeah. But I mean, it's a very red meat. So it's kind of beefy. I liken it to like bison or elk, where it's somewhat gamey, very stringy, and very, very dark red.
And how would you classify the actual taste of it?
Very beefy, like bison or like a gamey cow. I've heard it, they call it, a Papua New Guinea long pig. It's supposed to taste a lot like pork, but it's not like pork, like domesticated pork, because if you have like old world heritage pork from older breeds of pigs, it's a really, really dark meat. The other white meat is, I think, just from breeding or something like that. Because pork meat, you know, it can be very, very dark. And so I'd liken it to like heritage pork somewhat.
So the taste, that, I mean, that's one reason I'm sure people didn't, everybody didn't gag on it. It just, it kind of tasted like something they've had before. Just, it, I think, I would imagine it's more of a mental thing, knowing what you're eating.
It is. Yeah. Because it doesn't taste bad. It's a little bit chewy, mind you, but it didn't taste bad at all. It tastes like a damn good fajita.
So what was the conversation like while this was happening? Like during or after?
During it, there was bad religious jokes, bad sexual jokes to the effect of, I don't know if, again, you'll be inside 11 people at once again. And that was a pretty good joke. And there was a lot of awkward laughing. And we're all, you know, we're enjoying each other's company and whatnot and going through this. But just the dark humor that came out was just perfect.
I can see, like down the road, like into the distant future, this is something that kind of bonded this group of friends together. Like they've been through something that nobody else has been through.
Yes. Two of the people that ate me were at my wedding last weekend. It is my best man.
Is this common knowledge among your other friends? Or it's not? I can't imagine it would just happen to come up in conversation at some point.
No, it's common knowledge around the general group. And so there's some people I work with who know, none of the parents know. And that's, you know, purely by design. They're not going to understand it. They're going to kind of freak out. I don't think my siblings know. Hmm. And so it's mostly just the friend group. There and about, and certain people peppered out throughout. There's some people, when I did the story on Reddit, who recognized me and were like, is this you? It's like, yeah, it's me. So it's here and there. It's not a lot of people know me by name or anything like that. Mostly it's just on the internet, which is what makes it a reasonable thing to do, because it's not this big story that everybody knows me. It's like, oh, that's the cannibal guy. I'm only recognized for the most part the internet, and that's just by linking to my Reddit handle.
Right. Yeah.
So it's a perfect type of weird fame.
You kind of made Reddit history, didn't you?
Well, a little bit.
On the rare occasion that it does come up, and you're telling someone the story in person, mm-hmm. what's the reaction? There's the range of reactions that you get.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you the first date with my wife. We chatted online for a little while, and she said, "Well, let's go meet." And we met up at a bar over by where she lived, and she has sets of first date questions that she would go through. And she said, "Well, what's the weirdest thing you ever ate?" And yeah.
Oh, man, the one question I was hoping you weren't going to ask.
So I said, "Well, you know, I don't know you that well yet, so I'm gonna hold on to that. But I'd say the second weirdest thing is pig's ears." And she said, wait. Pig's ears is the second weirdest thing. You can't do that. No, I asked you, like, what was the weirdest thing? And I said, well, okay. So the weirdest thing I ever ate was a portion of my own amputated foot. And she kind of looked at me and said, you know, she asked for the background story, and I told her. And she kind of looked at me and said, you know, I don't know if I believe you, but okay. And about a week and a half later, my best man and his wife came down to visit, and she met them. And then it kind of dawned on her, like, oh, no, wait, this happened. And so within 2 weeks, it was absolutely confirmed that this whole story took place in her mind. She still dated me. And now she married me, so...
That's a pretty good litmus test. You know, you tell somebody that you've done something like that, and it's either no way, I'm never going to see you again, or this guy's interesting enough that he might be husband material.
You know,
do you ride a motorcycle now?
No, I'm not allowed.
Not allowed by who?
By my mother. She went through a lot through that whole experience. Basically took care of me for about a month, you know, staying with me and helping me around the house and whatnot. And she said, I don't want to ever go through that experience again. So just wait until I'm dead till you get on one again. And she got a pretty good deal because she's pretty young and healthy. So I'll be waiting for a while.
You're going to be waiting for a while, but you don't have a fear of getting back on a motorcycle and riding.
No, motorcycles is the best thing ever.
So does that mean, do you now have a prosthetic for your leg?
Yeah. Yes.
And how's that worked out? Is it pretty comfortable or what do you think?
It's pretty fantastic. I think it's all about the fit. And technology has come a long way. It's not like even back in the 80s, you know, it was kind of a static thing. But with the new technology that's come out, carbon fiber and the availability of it and new materials that have a lot of resistance and flex to them, it's fantastic. People don't know that I have a prosthetic unless I tell them, because I have a completely normal gait. I get around just fine.
Wow. So even walking, people can't tell that you don't have any kind of a limp or anything, huh?
No, I do pretty darn well. And I'm lucky in that, to where the way the surgery went and the fit and everything, I don't have any more extenuating circumstances that will cause me pain outside of, you know, things going on with the actual prosthetic. So, yeah, I do pretty well. I get around, I go bicycle riding a bunch, and I don't run, but I didn't run before, you know, when I had 2 feet. So it's not something I'm missing out on typically, but going hiking, going swimming and whatever. I mean, I walk all day outside for my job. I work construction, and so it doesn't slow me down.
Obviously, you are actually a real life cannibal now, right? Is that how you consider yourself, or is there any, do you feel any kind of stigma attached to that at all?
I mean, there's definitely a stigma attached to it, and maybe more so to me, because I am an auto cannibal. I mean, I ate my own flesh. So there's definitely a stigma attached to it, but I don't think the stigma applies necessarily globally, especially in this case, because it was ethical cannibalism. I consented to people eating. Everybody who ate me consented to eating me. Everybody knew what was going on. It wasn't like those stories you hear from South America or the East, where it's like somebody was killing people and serving it as street meat or anything like that. There was no malice involved in any of this process.
It's interesting. You know, you and I were talking before I hit the record button, and I mentioned that I'm a vegan. And so obviously I would not be eligible to partake in your little party. But then you brought up an interesting point that veganism means no animals were harmed. I've never seen any veganism information where it talks about cannibalism.
Because the concept of veganism is that you ethically can't put animals in servitude for your own well-being. So you're not going to keep cows and sheep and be milking them, because without their consent, that is a form of slavery. And because they can't consent, you can't gain that, which I totally understand. However, with people, you gain consent, right?
Yes, you can. And you did.
Yeah. So I think technically it's vegan. However, I feel that many people will argue that fact.
I can see them arguing it, but I'd want to hear the basis for the argument. I'm still not sure that I would do it myself, but I can definitely see both sides of it.
Well, you know, Scott, do you have any close friends who ride motorcycles? Because you never know. This opportunity may come up.
Well, it may. And there's another podcast episode for me. Right? Okay. One final question.
Yeah.
You've said that the accident and everything that happened after was the beginning of good things in your life. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, I always have an easy life. Grew up middle class, never struggled, ever. Never had a thing that I had to overcome to gain, I would say, character. And so I just kind of had an easy life going through everything, through college, through jobs. Kind of listless, just existing. And then I had this brush with death and kind of learned to appreciate everything that I had. And I set some goals 3 years ago in the hospital. It was, I wanted to find a partner to experience life with. I want to travel, and I wanted to find a job to afford all that. So I left my sleepy little town, moved to a bigger city. I found my partner, and now I'm married. I have found a fantastic career where I'm still at the bottom of the pay scale, but making more money than I ever thought I'd ever make, and going to start to travel the world now. Everything has just kind of picked up, and I have found this strength and resilience within myself to keep pushing, enjoying, and appreciating life. I mean, a foot's a small price to pay for this much personal growth.
Yeah. Well, character is built through difficulty, not through going through easy times.
Right.
It sounds like you've really taken advantage of this situation to build a much better life, a more intentional life.
I'd like to think so. You have to take what you can from any tragedy, learn what you can from it, and try to move on in any kind of healthy way, whether it be personal tragedy or death or getting laid off from a job, anything. You have to learn what you can and apply it going forward. Otherwise, you succumb to society and just being in a society, it's overwhelming. There's too many people. The way we've set things up, it is not conducive for a happy life. And so trying to eke out understanding and ways to work within it is absolutely necessary to find any happiness.
Yeah, we don't have any control over what happens to us, but we do have complete control over how we react to it. That's kind of the
exactly.
way I look at it anyway. Yeah. I certainly appreciate you sharing the story. I have a feeling that this will be what people, at least so far, will be considered the weirdest episode I've ever done. But hey, that's my point with this podcast, is to never be boring.
Well, fantastic.
You've been a great help with that. I appreciate it.
I'm glad, man. This was fun.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you know about any other podcast episode where the guest tells the story of eating his own foot, please let me know, because I think this is the only one. And before we head out the door, here's a word from Justin, the host of the popular true crime podcast, Obscura.
This is Justin from Obscura, a true crime podcast. Do you like single-host, narrative-driven true crime that isn't afraid to get graphic? On Obscura, we paint a picture of the lives of the criminals and victims before telling a story of the crime and how it unfolded. Add atmospheric production and audio clips such as 911 calls, and you have an idea of what we're about. If that intrigues you, type Obscura True Crime into your favorite podcatcher. You can't miss our logo. And we'll see you by the fire.
Thanks, Justin. If you're into true crime stories with all the gory details, Obscura might be just the thing you're looking for. I also want to let you know, if you're a podcaster, or actually if you're even just thinking about doing a podcast, you really should consider going to Podcast Movement, which is the biggest podcasting conference of the year. It's going to be in Orlando next month. That's August 13 to 16. I'll be there. So if you're going to be there, let me know so we can meet up. We've had some pretty good discussions in our private Facebook group recently. One of the things I asked the group is this: what other podcasts do you listen to besides this one? I'm thinking about doing some podcast promo trades with other shows, just like the one with Obscura today. And I want to make sure I target the shows that you guys like. Just another way to grab more listeners. And thanks again to those of you who support the show. If you'd like to be a patron and show your support for this show, you can do that at whatwasthatlike.com/support for as little as a dollar a month. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you here on the next episode, where we'll once again ask the question, what was that like?